This is your captain speaking. Welcome to another episode of DJ's Aviation Podcast. All systems are go, so lean back, grab a cup of coffee, and enjoy the show.
This is DJ's Aviation Podcast. Everything aviation.
Everything aviation.
Aviation news, airline developments, analyzing route networks, expansions of airlines and aircraft news, and we talk about world events and life. DJ's Aviation has a Discord server that's officially partnered with Discord, and you can join with a link in the show notes or using the vanity URL discord.gg/aviation. This is the DJ's Aviation Podcast, and now your host, Dan.
Welcome back to another episode of the DJ's Aviation Podcast. This definitely feels weird, as it's been a while, I'll be completely honest with you, since I have done an episode. I believe I promised I would do some while I was in Canada. That didn't really happen. I just sort of took the time off and relaxed, and I thought I would jot down notes of the important things, and then that way I could come back and record the episodes almost back to back and release them each weekend. This is the first episode, and I thought, what better place to start than with the journey to Canada. As for other episodes, I may go ahead and document the actual trip itself as like a diary for me personally, and if anyone wants to listen, well, then they're more than welcome to. In addition, I flew American Airlines for the very first time alongside Air Canada during this journey, and that is obviously something I want to document as an experience. I did also record a trip report on board the Air Canada 737 MAX, although that still does need to be compiled and edited before it will go out on YouTube, but that's a little taster of things to come. So those are some of the other podcast episodes I guess you can expect as part of the series. But like I said, what better place to start than with the journey to Canada, which basically includes the process getting to my end destination. And the best place to start is the PCR test. Before I do begin, if you are new to the podcast, do feel free to either give it a follow or subscribe to the feed. That way you'll be notified, I believe, when a new episode goes live. And of course, if you do enjoy the podcasts, dropping it a 5-star review is more than appreciated and welcome. This is being live streamed in our community Discord server, which you can also join through the link in the show notes or using the vanity URL code or link, pardon me, which is discord.gg/aviation. And it's a great place where people just chat about anything. Anyway, let's get on to the topic at hand, and that's beginning off with the PCR test. As you know, it's incredibly difficult at the moment to understand travel restrictions, regulations, what each country requires of you, and so much more. I don't know if I'm the only person that feels that way, but with everything changing seemingly every week, I have no clue what test is valid to enter into what country and when it needs to be done. So I, unfortunately, do get scammed and always just go for the PCR test. I feel like that's the easiest, and that way I know I'm not going to get screwed somewhere along my journey. Hopefully that will change by the next time I travel. But honestly, that just remains to be seen. I'm hoping it does. I'm hoping tests just get completely abolished because they are utterly pointless. And I will get onto why I believe they're a bit pointless later on. In fact, let me just jot that down as a note. In fact, you know what? Let's just talk about it now before I completely forget. I think PCR tests and general testing is pointless when it comes to travel. To give you an idea, I had needed a PCR test for the journey to Canada. So I had to take one from Sydney to Vancouver that was then valid from Vancouver to Montreal. But I didn't need to take a test for my Melbourne to Sydney flight. So theoretically, I took my test and I could have gotten on a Qantas plane and just gotten COVID on that plane and then spread it. Because do you know what I mean? So I mean, it's just, I think it's utterly ridiculous how some flights require it and some don't. I could have taken my domestic flight a day beforehand and then explored Sydney and I wouldn't have needed my PCR test. I wouldn't have needed my test to explore Sydney. So I just think it's so annoying how they do it. And anyway, you'll understand the nightmare of trying to do that. Typically, you're meant to get tested the day before. It's like the 24-hour period, so the day before. And I always do that, thanks nowadays to the express testing. There is express testing facilities at Melbourne Airport. That is where I do go. So I make the journey up there, get tested, then come back. That is what I did the night before my flight. It was around about 6 p.m. when I headed to the airport to try and get tested For reference, I was leaving 3 p.m. the next day. So it was, you know, it was the perfect opportunity to go and get tested then, have my result within 30 minutes and be able to print it all up for my flight the following day. Upon rocking up, turns out they had completely changed their rules. Now, this is something that was not noted in an email, not noted on their website, not noted on any of their social medias. Due to unprecedented demand, they don't offer day before testing anymore. I was not the only person, but there are countless people that had showed up the day before their flight to get tested, like anyone normally would, only to find out that, yeah, never mind, we're not going to allow you to do that due to unprecedented demand. That unprecedented demand calculated to, I believe, roughly 3 people in the entire facility getting tested. No one queued up, but, you know, unprecedented demand. So they basically refused to test me. They're like, we're not testing you. I was like, I'm flying tomorrow. And I'm like, I live far away, so I've come here. No, we're not testing you. We're too busy. Okay, sure. Which is utterly ridiculous. All the previous times I went to go get tested there, it was 55 times busier. And I'm just like, so what do you propose? I'm like, get here 6 hours before your flight, 6 hours before my Qantas domestic flight, 6 hours, and wait for your test. I'm like, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to sit here for 6 hours when I could. So, yeah. Anyway, when long story short, that was a wasted hour and, well, nearly 2 hours of my life at going there and back, only for them to have a little sign and poster out the front saying now they don't do that. I still find that absolutely ludicrous. Either way, went back. Then the next morning, I decided I'd get tested because I didn't really want to wait there 6 hours. So we went back in the morning, got tested, and I was negative. While I don't want to jinx myself, I've had, I believe now, somewhere around the region of 14 or 15 PCR tests for flights, and I've been negative for every single one. So I'm on a streak. I'm on a hot streak, and I'm happy with that. Hopefully next time I don't... Well, hopefully I won't even need a PCR test, pardon me, next time. But I've definitely done well for myself to not ever test positive. So, yeah. I just thought I'd mention that. I always find that funny. I'm like, oh, another one. I've managed to survive one more time. Let's see if I'll test positive the next time. And obviously, as you're probably more than aware, when you do get tested, you always feel like you have COVID. I don't know if I'm the only one, but I always feel sick right after or before I get tested. I'm like, oh, I don't feel like my head hurts. I'm definitely going to test positive. But I think that's just the worry that so much is riding on you testing negative. Because if you test positive, you aren't going. And then it's the whole nightmare of trying to sort all that out. Either way, we're now fast forwarding to the day of the flight. I've had my PCR test, heading off to the airport. As I mentioned, I was first doing a Qantas domestic through to Sydney. And one thing I did notice is Melbourne Airport was deserted. Now, we're talking a Saturday afternoon, and it was dead. It was really, really honestly upsetting to see the Qantas domestic terminal. No one in it. Do you know what I mean? There were flights going out, but there was just no one there. There was only one restaurant opened past security, so that was a bit annoying because I didn't realize, and obviously I don't typically eat plain food that frequently, but I was like, oh God, I might not be eating for the next 36 hours or something, that much food, and I didn't think about getting food before security because I just imagined that the food court would be open, but no, it wasn't. So there's a warning for you. I don't know whether it's changed. I will be finding out in 2 months because, spoiler, I'm heading back to Canada in 2 months for like 4 or 5 months. But yeah, so if you do need to travel and you're using the Qantas domestic terminal at Melbourne, maybe just be safe and get something before you go through security. Because as dumb as it sounds, I wasn't even able to find a soft drink in the entire terminal. That's just as an example to show you how the pandemic's really affected a lot of businesses and a lot of things are shut. A lot of things are temporarily closed. But there was a nice burger place, a Porto, which was open before security that I would have gone to, but I didn't think about it. So yeah, that's just a thing of, because honestly, the only shop that was open to eat from was like a sit down restaurant, which was very nice. I had a burger and chips, but it was very expensive and I probably would have rather something a lot cheaper. But even their like news agencies, so small, didn't even have any soft drinks, barely. They didn't have like sandwiches or anything. So I would definitely recommend getting something before the flight and before you go through screening. But like I said, I flew now about a month ago, exactly a month ago, and I don't know whether it's changed at all, given restrictions have eased further. It may have, and maybe more restaurants are open, but considering it was a Saturday and everything was shut, I don't know. Either way, a pleasant experience. Check-in was a bit of a nightmare, and I'll explain now and you'll find out why a little bit later. But I'm the kind of person that always gets confused as an Australian, if I want to go anywhere in the world, I have to take many flights. Do you know what I mean? And if any Australians are listening to this, you'll know what I mean. We're not in the United States. We're not in UK. It means that we can't just simply jump on a two-hour flight and we're in Paris or we're in wherever, or it's very easy. It's quite difficult if I want to get to America, or if I want to get, like, let's say I wanted to get to not anywhere but Los Angeles. It does require many flights. It's the same for Canada when it comes to me wanting to get to Montreal. I had to take multiple flights. It's the same if I want to get to Venice, you know, multiple flights. So I always get confused where my checked baggage is. Like, I don't know whether I need to collect it after a flight, check back in, go through security. Like, I'm just someone that can't process that. I feel like flights are very stressful enough, and usually I do okay, but that's probably the one thing I always get so confused with, and that's like where my baggage is and what's going to happen to it, whether I need to collect it or whether I don't. So I was told that my bags would go all the way through to Montreal. This is not what actually ended up happening. I'll just fast forward quickly for the sake of this little story. Had I not been paying attention on the flight into Vancouver, I would have lost my bag because I was told something completely different at check-in, and definitely frustrating to hear that, because I was like, why am I being told one thing? And, you know, I could have lost my bag. So thank God I was listening for that split 5 seconds where they said you'll need to collect your bags regardless of what you were told at your origin airport. And I just was like, this is a Qantas flight. Do you know what I mean? I didn't even switch airlines going into Vancouver. She looked at my itinerary and still was like, it's going all the way through to Montreal. Well, it didn't. So that was probably the only hiccup that was a bit frustrating, because as someone who does stress enough trying to get their bags to the end destination, I was like, oh my God, it's going through to Montreal. This is incredible. And then I was like, oh God. It was fine though, doing the bag transit in Vancouver. It just would have been nice to actually, when you ask that question, get that answer. That's correct, but it is what it is. As for the Qantas domestic service, there's no complaints, and I will always stand by what I say. Qantas are one of the best airlines flying on board, but the minute you step outside, it just falls apart, in my opinion. Like, I always thoroughly can't speak highly enough of the cabin crew, for the most part, the ones working within the airport. Well, no, I'd lie. I lie about that, and you'll hear about it in podcasts down the line, just how crap it is. But as for the most part, the people within the airport are good, and the cabin crew are exceptional. Like, I never have any issues on a Qantas aircraft. It's just, when you step outside of it, it becomes a bit of a problem, and I think that's what turns me off them so much. But as for the domestic flight, it was brilliant. I mean, absolutely no complaints. There was in-flight Wi-Fi, which was completely free, so I was able to document the whole experience over on my Twitter. On top of that, we even got a little snack, which was some carrots, celery, dip, and crackers, which I thought was cool. It was only an hour flight. I didn't really need anything, but they still gave us that complimentary, and I guess it is what you pay for, because Qantas are more expensive. But what I found funny is Air Canada are also pretty expensive, and they don't offer crap on their flights. Like, you've got to pay $20 if you want something, which I thought was funny, that they were charging low-cost prices and didn't even offer really anything complimentary. That's not me being greedy, don't get me wrong. That's just me saying, as in, Air Canada are not a low-cost carrier. They're pretty expensive. So I was expecting something, at least, but no. Oh, well. And especially, I did fly Air Canada for, like, 6.5 hours, and from what I've heard from people like on Twitter and on social media that I've been in contact with, it's pretty standard for even longer flights Air Canada to not give you anything sort of complimentary, which I was pretty shocked by, especially because I got a snack on my domestic Qantas flight, and then coming back to Melbourne, I even got a sandwich. So yeah, I guess it's just the difference in quality and stuff like that. But as for Sydney Airport, we had two polar opposites going, leaving from Sydney to go to Canada and leaving from Sydney to go to Melbourne. One was the best experience I've ever had when it comes to transiting, like genuinely the best experience, and I cannot say enough good things about it. And then the other one was potentially one of the craziest I've been through. Like I said, I won't get onto the craziest one just yet, but we'll stick with the simple and the really awesome one. As I was flying Qantas domestically and internationally, I was able to get on the Qantas International Transfer bus, which, yes, does go airside. And if you did look at my social media, which is only Twitter, I was able to go airside and get pictures of all the freight aircraft, the 747s, literally going right next to them from the bus window, which was awesome, to be completely honest. But it was just so simple. I think I walked 50 meters from the gate that my plane arrived at to the international transfer, sat down, waited about 30 minutes for the international bus, which did leave timings a little bit tight, I will admit, because I think the bus only comes once every 45 minutes. So sometimes if you like just miss the bus, which I did, you have to wait a little bit longer. And sometimes that can make it a little bit difficult with timings. But I was fine in the end. It's probably more so an issue if you are flying when it wasn't the pandemic, because naturally then you're under time constraints, if you know what I mean. Like, you don't have 3 hours and it's maybe security's even longer. But thankfully, after the transit to the international terminal, customs was empty, security was empty. Do you know what I mean? I just went right through. So I guess that probably helped it. And the transit was awesome. Security was fine. I mean, like I've always said, Australian border control is like 11 out of 10. Maybe that's because I have an Australian passport, but in comparison to all the other border controls I've dealt with, I think Australia is definitely the most relaxed and probably leaves you the less stressed, if you will. Going through, there was duty free. I went straight to the, where was it? A specific gate, because I was alerted to, thanks to a staff in our Discord server, I was actually alerted to the Qatar 777 25th anniversary arriving into Sydney. So I was sort of at a race against the clock. I was like, am I going to make it? Am I going to have a view of the plane? And lo and behold, the aircraft was arriving into the gate with the huge windows for the food court. So it was sort of perfect. So I plonked myself down in the chair, got out my camera and everything, and waited for its arrival and got some absolutely stunning photos of the aircraft pulling into the gate after its flight from Doha, which I'm very, very happy with. And a lot of people really liked seeing that aircraft. So I wouldn't have been able to see that, though, without thanks to one of our staff members in the Discord server. So a big thank you to you. You know who you are. Other than that, I had to get some McDonald's because, again, I wasn't sure whether I was going to be able to eat on the plane. And that was definitely a race against the clock. I don't think I've ever scoffed my food down quicker than that McDonald's, which was just some nuggets and chips. Purely because, like I mentioned at maybe like 5 minutes ago, I did mention to you that sometimes taking the international transfer bus, if you do not have a long layover, can be a little bit pushy for time. Now, albeit, I did choose to take pictures of the Qatar 777, but other than that, I didn't really do anything. And there was quite a long wait to get my food at the McDonald's. I was basically eating my food as... No, my food hadn't arrived, pardon me, as boarding had started. And I'm that kind of person that needs to be there when boarding starts. So yeah, I scoffed my food down, probably gave myself indigestion, and then ran to the gate. And this is where I probably had the best experience ever when it comes to staff. Actually, to be fair, American Airlines are pretty good. So let's just say at this point in my life, and at this point in my life when I had never flown American Airlines, this was my best experience. I explained to the check-in agent that I, or boarding agent, if you will, that I had a peanut allergy. And she was like, okay, we'll board you first, no problem. They boarded me first. I got a personal, basically, escort down to the plane by the general manager of the flight. He then announced to all the staff individually that I had a peanut allergy, what my seat number was. He explained to me what the food was going to be served on the flight. Then he, when everyone had boarded, he explained to everyone around me that there was someone, without naming me, there was someone with a peanut allergy, so don't consume them. And I've never experienced something like that, so hats off to the people on board that flight through to Vancouver, because they were 11 out of 10 for that. I've just had people like, oh, okay, no worries. But he really went sort of above and beyond to let everyone know. And then I even had people coming, like when the cabin crew would serve me my food, they would remember that I had the peanut allergy and explain to me what the food was. Even though I know for the most part I can eat Qantas like meals, which is unfortunately why I have to fly them most of the time, because on the routes I need to fly, they're sort of the only option. I guess I'm unlucky like that, to be completely honest with you. Either way, they were very, very good, and I definitely appreciated that. From start to finish, just how brilliant they were with everything and dealing with my allergy. And that's what I mean when I say everyone has different experiences, because if you're just a regular passenger, you won't get that service. Do you know what I mean? Well, most likely because you don't have an allergy. But if in my case, I had an allergy and I had a very good experience with them. But like I always said, was that experience worth the hassle? Well, pardon me. Was all the hassle booking the flights and calling Qantas customer support for 40 hours worth the good service? No, just purely because of the stress it caused me, but it was nice to at least have awesome service on board the Qantas aircraft. That being said, as for the journey up, I was lucky that Qantas was still sort of doing social distancing on their international flights, which means there was no one in the middle of my row of three, so I was able to, at the very least, stretch my legs out just a tiny bit, which meant I was able to catch some sleep. Very broken sleep, albeit, but I did my best. Otherwise, I think I just watched The Office on my phone, which I downloaded, and just tracked my flight over and over again. But the one downside, and I would say probably is a major nowadays turn off, is there's no Wi-Fi on Qantas aircraft internationally. They just don't have it. So that means even if you were doing like Sydney to Perth to London, pardon me, which is 17 and a bit hours, there's no Wi-Fi. And obviously that's me being pretty, how do I put it? I think that's what we've gotten used to, is a lot of flights have Wi-Fi, but Qantas don't. And nowadays, again, nowadays, not 15 years ago, but nowadays, I feel like that's a bit of a downside to flying. Like keeping in contact with your relatives or being able to check the news or do some work is impossible on those planes because there is no Wi-Fi, there's no connection. That's just my personal opinion, and I guess everyone's different. Like some people may want to switch off, some people don't like Wi-Fi on planes. I'm someone that does. So I think when I review my experience, I'll always say that it'd be cool if Qantas did have some sort of connection on their aircraft. That being said, it wasn't a bad flight. It would just be cool for Qantas to eventually roll out some kind of Wi-Fi. I mean, if they want to go with Project Sunrise, I feel like they don't have a choice. I don't think there's any way in hell they could offer a Sydney to London flight with no connection, like no Wi-Fi, no anything on board. I'd be very, very shocked if they do. Obviously, they're going to have the A350 jet to utilize on these Project Sunrise flights, so I imagine they'll have something. They are rolling out Wi-Fi on their domestic services, but as for international, it seems pretty much non-existent. As for everything else, comfort was fine. It was a smooth ride, but actually the arrival into Vancouver was very, very, very bumpy. Probably one of the bumpiest arrivals I've had, which I think's fun. I mean, some people will hate it. I know some people hate that kind of thing, but I was like, this is fun. Sort of going up and down, left and right. It's like a roller coaster ride. And I think maybe I like that because I know I'm going to be safe. Well, I should say that I think I'm always going to be safe. Knowing you're going to be safe in that situation's, you know, not a good way to think if something was to happen. But I guess I'm so confident in the pilot's ability that I don't really ever worry. So therefore, having a bit of turbulence on the landing and a bit of a wobbly landing is actually quite fun for me. Going up and then going down, it's like, oof, it really wakes you up. That's a good way to put it. And I had an 8-hour layover in Vancouver, so I definitely needed some waking up. This podcast is not going to go into my experience with Air Canada because naturally my next flight to Montreal was with Air Canada. So I'm purely going to stop just as I'm about to board the Air Canada flight. So that means as for the Vancouver airport, it's one of my favorite airports I've ever flown through. To be completely honest with you, I really, really liked Vancouver airport. I don't know what it was. I don't know whether, well, probably it was the interior. It felt so homely and it didn't feel like an airport. It really didn't feel like an airport. It felt so relaxing, so warm. There was lots of exposed wood. There was lots of dark colors that were like woods. And I really, really liked it. It was a great place to spend 8 hours. And I managed to go to every single gate in the terminal and see every single plane that was parked up, which was all part of the trip report. There was a great selection of places to eat, drink, sit. I managed to have a panini with chips, and that was at a little sit-down restaurant and bar sort of thing, and they were playing sports, and I really enjoyed that meal. I managed to do some work. Like I said, I managed to do a thorough trip report even before I'd basically flown to Montreal because I had such a long layover. In fact, my Qantas flight arrived in at about 2:45 p.m. local time, and my flight to Montreal was leaving at, you know what? I think it was longer than 8 hours, to be completely honest with you. I think it was genuinely longer than 8 hours. My flight got in at 2:45 p.m. local time, and my flight to Montreal left at 11:25 p.m. local time. So yeah, I do think it was longer. I do think it was longer than 8 hours. So yeah, it was quite a lengthy stay in the airport, but it didn't really feel like that because I enjoyed my time so much in that airport, and I couldn't speak highly enough of it. If you do have the opportunity to transit through Vancouver or fly out of Vancouver, definitely do that. I didn't see the whole airport, but I saw the WestJet area, the propeller area, the general Air Canada area, and it was really, really nice. And I'm excited to go back through there in a couple of months when I'm going back to Montreal. So yeah, great airport. My favorite that I've been through, I think probably second favorite would have to be, ooh, that's a tough one if I'm ranking airports. Doha was good. Doha was definitely good. They have like a little break area, pardon me, where you can put your feet up on like a sand sunbed, if you will. And that was really comfortable. But otherwise, maybe London Heathrow was good. I don't know. To me, Vancouver was the one that stands out the most. Maybe Los Angeles could follow behind Vancouver. But I think just as a favorite, definitely Vancouver. As for everything else, I didn't do much. Like I said, a little bit of work and just was waiting around for my flight. The flight was with Air Canada, so that means I'm going to end the podcast here. And next weekend will be my review of Air Canada. What I will do is... What I'll probably do is have the Air Canada flight to Montreal and then the Air Canada flight to Los Angeles as one podcast episode, as like my experience flying Air Canada. I feel like it'd be stupid to just do a one flight review and then do another one, which is like two experiences. I think I'll just combine the two, talk about the pros and cons of the flight to Montreal and then the one to Los Angeles. I flew on the MAX to Montreal and the 220 to Los Angeles. So it was also two totally different aircraft types. And I have some strong, maybe controversial opinions that I want to get into. They're positive, but maybe that's why they're controversial. We shall see. Thank you very much, as always, for the support. I do apologize for no podcasts coming out in the past, month or so. I was just sort of taking the 3 weeks off, but I'm back now. And obviously there's a lot to talk about. I still haven't done the plane spotting at Los Angeles episode, so that's got to come out. I do have a couple of interviews lined up as well, which will be turned into podcasts. So hopefully there's going to be quite a lot of exciting travel content, if you will, to talk about in the podcast. And I still want to get more back into aviation-related news as the podcasts, but I just feel like this year has been so busy, these first 3 months, that there just hasn't been any time to sort of sit down and talk about, as an example, Emirates and the 777X. It's just been all guns blazing, flight after flight, which I'm very grateful for, and hopefully it makes the podcasts somewhat exciting to listen to. That being said, like I'll always say, if you do enjoy these, you can review them on, I now believe, Spotify and also Apple Podcasts. And you can listen on any platform of your choosing. So if you're listening on SoundCloud right now, I am also on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, and many, many other platforms. So just search DJ's Aviation Podcast and you should be able to find it somewhere. Thank you once again for listening. Hope you enjoyed the journey to Canada. Once again, next week will be most likely the Air Canada experience, which should be a good one for any Canadians that are out there that do have pride in their national airline. Thanks, and I will see you next time.
You've been listening to DJ's Aviation Podcast, one of the most unique podcasts on the internet, offering up your one-stop shop for all things aviation. We discuss aviation news, airline developments, analyze route networks, expansions of airlines and aircraft news. We hope you've enjoyed the show. We know we had fun. Make sure to like, rate, and leave a review. In the meantime, hook up with us on Twitter and YouTube at DJ's Aviation. If you're interested in rail, check out our second channel at DJ's Transport. Till next time.